Wargaming Recon is proudly sponsored by the Maine Historical Wargamers Association. They're the folks behind Huzzah! Historical Wargaming for New England. Huzzah will take place May 19th through the 21st, 2017 at the Doubletree in South Portland, Maine. Experience some of the best historical wargaming at Huzzah! Visit www.huzzahcon.com for more information. Welcome to Wargaming Recon. I am your host, Jonathan J. Reinhardt. Wargaming Recon is the only member of the TSR Podcast Network to discuss historical and New England gaming. This is a very special episode, 184. Huzzah! 2017! So I want to welcome all of you to this special episode of Wargaming Recon. Remind you that we will cover a lot of topics in the episode, but you don't have to worry, because we get you covered with our show notes. Just go to wargamingrecon.com/WR184. That's wargamingrecon.com/WR184. So I am joined today with one of my co-hosts, the one and only Mr. Adrian Benson. Adrian, how are you?
I'm doing good, John. Thanks. I hope I'm the one and only.
Well, you know, you might have a doppelganger out there that we're just not aware of.
Let's all hope not.
We do hope. So we're talking about Huzzah. We're recording it live from Huzzah here in beautiful Portland, Maine. And this is the, third, fourth year that we've done this?
Third year, I think.
We've been coming more than that, but third year we've actually done recordings from here.
Yeah, I don't know how many times you've been up here. I've been to every one since they started doing it, so I think that's, 5 years now?
I think so. I missed the first one, and I can't remember if I missed the second one as well or not, because I remember you talking about it once. You're like, hey, you got to go to this convention, and I don't know if I went the next year or not.
Yeah, I don't know.
I honestly, that's boring audio for people, but I honestly, it is. It's like, oh, man, will you remember or not?
And two old guys sitting around trying to remember something that's riveting radio or podcasting or whatever.
It's like everyday life for some people. So this year they held it again at the Doubletree Inn in South Portland near the Main Mall and the Jetway, same place that they've held it for the past 2 years prior, because they moved. They used to be at the Fireside Inn and Suites.
Yeah, which used to be a Holiday Inn, but yeah.
Yeah. So then they moved over here. It's a great venue and just tons of space, actually. It feels cozy, but a lot of space for you to play games in and for vendors to set up in. A lot of nice hotel rooms in there.
Parking is good.
Parking is pretty good.
Can't emphasize that enough.
It's unusual compared to some other conventions that people may go to. The parking is great. It's not too far from the doors, which is important, especially if you're carrying all that gaming stuff and you get to set up your tables and everything.
Yeah, well, you can always unload in front of the door. But yeah, no, I just throw that out there mostly as a humorous inside kind of a joke.
But you know, it's true, you could unload at the door, but not everyone, because if everyone's trying to do it at the same time because they like the games, you could have a line a mile long trying to go. So it's nice if you can get at stuff without having to go too far from the entranceway. And a lot of good places around to eat.
Yeah.
Which is nice. Other game stores are nearby. And I got to say, I know it's a Doubletree, so Doubletree is a nicer caliber of hotel. It's owned by the Hilton people. But it's really nice.
Oh, yeah.
Some conventions are held in hotels, and they're not as nice as one might expect.
Yeah.
It's really nice. The Lado's really good. Good selection of games. And one thing that I think makes Huzzah special compared to other game conventions is that although it's family-friendly, you are allowed to bring and buy beverages from the bar and all that kind of sort. Hi, we got an audience. So there's a variety of games that are available as well, and we played in a few, not as many as usual. So on Friday night, you and I played in the same game.
We did. I'm going to have to read it, and I know I can't pronounce it.
That's why I'm having you say it.
Yeah. Chodositz. It was a War of Austrian Secession game run with Carnage Board, two rules by Rich Wallace, Prussians versus Austrians.
Our first time using Carnage and Glory.
Yeah, it was. I really wanted to give that a try this year. At every convention I attend, somebody's running Carnage and Glory. I never get a chance to play in it because it's a popular system. The games always fill up, and I always register late. But we made it in this year, and it was a lot of fun. I don't think it's a set that I'll ever buy because it. I didn't really talk to Rich about it, but it looks like you got to do a lot of setup work in the computer to get the scenario going, so that the computer can manage all the casualties, all the morale check, and everything. So I think it'll be a lot of pre-setup work, which doesn't appeal to me.
No, I got to say, my first time also playing it, and I like that the computer does all that work.
Yeah.
But the prep for it has to be terrible. And the interface, he was using it on a Windows machine.
Yeah.
So it seemed very database, and it has to be, but very database driven, where like you have this window here and you got to check this box and that and type all these things, pick stuff from drop down. And just to get all that.
You guys don't do that on Macs.
No, we're special on Mac.
Just pictures on Macs.
We're special snowflakes on Macs. But to get all that data put in. The time.
Yeah, I think it would be a lot of work. Like I said, and I could be wrong. I didn't talk to him about it, but it just seems like it would be a tremendous amount of work to get it set up. But it's a lot of fun.
A lot of fun.
The computer does all the combat results, all the morale check results, all the keeps track of fatigue for all the troops and everything. It occasionally throws out some cute little tidbits about this, that, or the other thing that may have gone wrong. And it's a lot of fun. It's a fun system. You do kind of, I guess I'm an old-fashioned guy, but you do lose a little bit not actually rolling dice, but I didn't miss it as much as I thought I would.
I love to roll dice just as much as the next person, but I actually really enjoyed not rolling dice with this because I was able to focus more on the game.
Yeah.
But at the same time, it was a little bit confusing because you don't remove casualties with this. The computer keeps track of it all, but the number of models stays the same. There's no tokens that you add on or any of that kind of stuff to denote how many guys are left.
Right.
And so it was kind of weird, like, just you're moving your troops around, and I had a bunch of infantry guys to do, and moving them around, and trying to attack, and thinking, okay, what kind of condition are the enemy forces in? What kind of condition are my guys in? Because I got shot at a little bit, and I couldn't visualize that as much, but at the same time, it felt a little more authentic.
Yeah, it probably does, because it's probably looking across the field and everything, okay, I think that guy's about ready to break, I want to, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, so.
In one way that I thought it was really good, though, was... For me, it gave the feel more of they actually being like hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of guys in a formation.
Yeah.
Because if you're playing a regular war game that you actually have markers and tokens and stuff like that on to denote casualties, you're removing stuff. I think of it more as like one figure is one guy. Even though like the one figure is totally like 20 or 50 guys.
Yeah.
I think of it as a 1-to-1 ratio, whereas this, you really do get the abstract quality of it.
Yeah. Yeah. Definitely a good system. It's enjoyable. I'd love to play it again, but like I said, I don't think it's one I'll ever pick up.
Maxed out table, too.
Oh, yeah.
Actually, more than maxed out. Because
more than maxed out. We had a guy show up. Could I please do something? So.
Well, no, but you know what's funny, though? Because so it's four per side, and then this other gentleman came up, and he actually pre-registered to play the game.
Oh, he did?
He was signed up for it, and so I don't know how that happened where he was signed up, but it was already full, so I don't know if maybe time had come. And he wasn't there and was like, okay, let's start. And if maybe someone just started and thought, oh, this will be a lot of fun. Can I play? And, oh, we have an opening. Yeah. Like, I don't know how the heck it got overbooked. But it was clearly overbooked.
Yeah.
Because we were on the Austrian side, which was weird. But the way it was divided out, you could actually just set it up for four people. You had a cavalry wing on our left, the cavalry wing of more skirmish-type cavalry on the right,
yeah.
And then you had your core block of infantry in the middle, but really was set up in two lines so that you could separate it out. Someone could take the front line, someone could take the back, and then you had artillery and some skirmishers, too, and that could have been worked out however. And so the fifth guy, he took the artillery and the skirmishers.
Yeah.
Were they Jaegers?
Grenzers,
sorry.
Yeah.
In the front. So we didn't give him as much to use for that
in the front. Yeah.
So it really was, I think, intended for four people. And then the Prussians on the other side, it didn't look like they had as much on the table, actually, when we sat down, but then all this stuff appeared.
Well, they had a bunch of stuff that you couldn't really see back in the woods and in the town, so yeah, it kind of was a bit of a surprise.
I was certainly surprised seeing all of this gigantic column of infantry coming through this town, coming out to attack us. And the goals of the game were obviously get to kill your opponent, right? But for the Austrians, we had a small little town on our side, and it was worth 2 points to the Prussians right if they captured it. And there was a hill in the middle. It was worth 4 points to us if we captured it. Yes. No, 2 points to us.
2 points to either side for the hill.
And then there was a larger town right on their side.
Yeah, if we took their town, we got 4 points. If they took our town, they got 4 points. If we held it, we got two, that kind of thing.
Yeah. So it swapped around for that kind of stuff. And the game went to the time. It was a 7:30 game. We ended at 11:30. And actually, probably could have went another hour, truth be told.
It could have, but I think by the time we called it, it was basically over for the Austrians. I mean, our cavalry was all completely, it was gone.
Yeah, but by like second turn, third turn maybe, both wings of cavalry, they were in, half the units were like fleeing, they were gone.
Yeah.
And it took a while for our infantry to get through because we were trying to go around the artillery.
Yeah, which we shouldn't have done because the artillery was completely ineffective.
Yeah, it was useless. Just, even when it hit, it would take out one guy.
Yeah.
Their artillery was much better. I'm not sure.
Well, that's because...
Is it because it's Prussian or just because...
No, it's because we were right in front of it because we had to charge in.
That's true.
Basically stand right in front of it to try to take the hill away, so...
It was hard. I mean, you charged up there, you got stuck in. You actually did pretty well on the hill.
Yeah, I didn't... Yeah.
I wouldn't have expected it with the way things were arranged and...
Yeah, I would have liked to see how that had gone to conclusion, but we were definitely at time, so...
But. It was a good game. My one complaint about it, and I do have a complaint about the game.
No kidding. Jonathan has a complaint about something, everybody.
So, the game's really good, but I think because everything has to flow through the GM, you have so many people trying to send information to the GM because the GM is the one controlling the computer and getting the results and everything. Because of that, it caused some backup and stuff and caused the game to slow down tremendously. So there was periods where... people on either side were just kind of sitting there like, we don't have anything to do, and you're waiting 20 minutes or whatever. So it fell into that trap, and it's not Rich's fault. He actually ran a really good game. It's a good set of rules. It was version 2.0. I don't know if that matters to people, but it was really good. But the downside is because you have this one person as mediator, basically, and everything has to go through them, even if they wanted to have assistant GMs, someone else helping, they couldn't.
Because of the computer.
And so with the number of people, it's almost, I think, maybe it's one of those kind of games, maybe kind of like Maurice, where if you're going to have a large multiplayer game, you actually have to treat it as smaller.
Two separate games.
Yeah. So you could have like GMs on either side running it, and you just break it down to smaller sections of the battle and that kind of stuff. Just to keep the flow going. Really well run, though. And every time I've seen Carnage and Glory at a con or a game day, it's packed. And it's usually done by Rich, but it's always packed. People are having a blast. And Mike Payne actually told me, that sign up for it. He's like, it's a really good system. He plays it a lot with Rich.
Yeah.
And he said, you should play this. You're going to love it. And he's like, okay. I'll do it because you recommend. But I'm like, I don't know if I'm going to. I loved it.
Yeah. No, it's definitely. I'll definitely play it again if I can get into it.
Not enough that I'll actually buy stuff to like paint or. Because I don't do that kind of stuff. But.
Yeah, no kidding, right?
But it was really good.
John doesn't paint. There's another news flash.
I know.
It's two breaking news items. John has a complaint about something, and he doesn't paint any figures.
Can we just, rename the show? John doesn't paint and complains.
It's your show. Do what you want.
So then, Saturday morning, you played a game, right?
I did.
Assault on Russian Commune.
209. 209, yeah. It was a... relief of the theme of the weekend. Well, I shouldn't say that. The theme of the weekend was actually supposed to be British Colonial Wars, but it ended up being 75th anniversary of the Battle of Stalingrad. So anyway, the Solemn Commune 209 was a chain of command game run by Mitch Abrams, and it was an attempt by the German army to break through Russian defenses and relieve Stalingrad at this Soviet State Farm 209.
28 mil, 20 mil,
15.
15 mil.
Actually. Yeah, I did chain of command of 15, which was a little bit odd.
How was that?
It was fine.
It was okay with the rules and everything. Because sometimes,
the change rules of scale. Work with 15 millimeters. Just people, skirmish games. People tend to run 28 or 20, or 25, or whatever.
1/72 scale.
Yeah, but no, it worked fine with 15 millimeter. I mean, the figures or the rules rather support it with no problems. But it was a good game. Chain of command is. I shouldn't say it's my favorite because there's a couple of other skirmish sets for World War II that I need to try before I can say what my favorite is. But I prefer Chain of Command over Bolt Action, let me put it that way. Bolt Action is very gamey, very tournament-oriented. It doesn't have to be that way, but that's the way it's designed. And, you know,
Well, I think it depends on the group of people, right? So Bolt Action clearly is a tourney kind of with the points and all that kind of stuff. And we shouldn't make this an episode about points. We could.
No, we can do one of those. So.
We should. But I think if you approach it from the mindset of here's a scenario.
Yeah.
And you play, these are the forces, not here's 100 points, figure out what you can fit in.
Yeah, build your power list, make sure you
have I got my tiger for 100 points, you know, or whatever. Like,
yeah,
you want something more fluff or historical as opposed to my power list.
Yeah, I mean, Bolt Action is a good set of rules.
Fun. I really enjoy it.
It's the other aspects of it that I don't care for. But like I say, it depends on who you play with. You don't have to... you don't have to play it that way. But anyway.
Chain of Command's cool because two varieties, they do a completely different approach to all the games.
They have a completely different concept about the tactical and the way the game should work. And all of their games, well, I say all of their games, the two that I'm very familiar with are Chain of Command and I Imp and Shotlock. They're very oriented around the leaders. Mm-hmm. And you really, on your turn activations, the important thing is to get the leaders going and then have them activate the troops. Under them, whereas Bolt Action didn't used to focus on that. They kind of do now with second edition Bolt Action. They've changed the rules a bit. Kind of, I don't know if it was to mimic Chain of Command or why, but now in Bolt Action, when you activate a leader, depending on the level of leader, they can also activate some of their subordinate units.
That's kind of cool.
It is, and it's different from the way Chain of Command does it, but it gives you some more options in Bolt Action too. But
Chain of Command has your thumbs up.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Your seal of approval?
My seal of approval with one exception, which didn't come into play in this game. So.
And what would that one exception happen to be?
That one exception would be off-board artillery, the way off-board artillery and mortar barrages work. If you, in Chain of Command, if you get a mortar barrage on the table, you have won the game. It's really just that simple.
It happened last year, didn't it, to you?
It happens every time you play, if there's a mortar involved.
Because
unless somebody house rules that ridiculous mechanical way. And in the rule book, they talk about it. So let me explain. Now we're freaking involved and we're down the rabbit hole.
So this is your version of
this is.
I don't paint. I'm going to complain about stuff.
Yeah, this is my impression. Yeah. So when you get a mortar barrage on the table, it covers a certain area. I forgot what it is. Like 12 by 12 or 18 by 18 inch.
I'll take your word.
Area. But whatever it is. The mortar barrage lands, and when it does, everything that's in that square area gets hit, and everything is suppressed, and you can't do anything. You can't see through it. You can't shoot through it. The only thing you can do is go down or take a tactical stance, is what they call it in Chain of Command, and hope and roll your saves because you get hit every turn. Because that's the other really cool thing about mortars in Chain of Command. Once they're on the board, once the barrage comes in, it stays there. And it hits every turn until, if you're lucky enough, that you have, and it's tough to understand what this is without going into the whole way Chain of Command works, unless you have a Chain of Command die that you can then use, it's like a point to end the turn. When the turn ends, the mortar barrage ends, finally. Unless the other guy also has enough Chain of Command points, and then he can use those points to say, oh, no, it doesn't. It is an idiotic, ridiculous, inexplicable rule.
I wish you all were here to see us as we're recording this, because Adrian's doing, I'm Italian, Adrian's doing the Italian thing, waving his hands around.
It just, in an otherwise really good set of rules, it just infuriates me to no end. It is so stupid.
Well, it was really bad.
And their excuse is that in real life, you know, if you're under an artillery barrage or a mortar barrage or whatever, this is what it's like. I don't care. It's because it's a horrible game mechanic. It's one of those things where this is the
how
way
did it get
is.
Out of playtest? Is what they
really love it. If you go on the forums and everything, they'll defend it. Then you know that's fine.
It's well, just, maybe we should have them on the show so they can defend it. So, any of you who are listening and have connections, please reach out to Fred Lardies, and we'll hear their side from them straight from the horse's mouth.
Yeah, and I mean their
and
side
then you can debate them on it.
I don't think it's going to be any debate.
You can harangue them about it.
No, their side is right, and it's well explained, and I agree with their reasoning.
But it's a game.
But it's exactly. As a game mechanic, it's it,
If you want to go in and paintball and have a paintball mortars come down and hit your over and over, whatever.
Yeah.
But it's a game.
Yeah, it's just, and I, nobody else, like when you play the games up here, nobody has really house ruled it or anything. So it's possible that I'm the only person in the world that can't stand it.
Well, I think we should probably put that question up. There's a lot of listeners of the show who come to Huzzah and play a lot of games here. If you have been to Huzzah this year, please write into us, Jonathan@WargamingRecon.com, and let us know what you think about Chain of Command with the mortar roll. Maybe Adrian is wrong. I know it doesn't happen often, but maybe, just maybe he's wrong, right?
I may be the only person with this opinion because nobody else seems to complain about it.
But do you know what? If you're not, if everyone else is just kind of the silent majority and they feel this way, maybe it should be a convention rule that...
Yeah.
And I've seen it done at other cons. We'll have like a con rule. This is how we handle this. This is a common system, rule system that we use. This is how it's played here at the con. So you know when you go in, this is how it's done. So yeah, maybe... Well,
They do it here with black powder for some of the stuff, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So maybe for Chain of Command, if people feel this way, maybe it needs to be a con rule. Maybe this is a recommendation to the MHWA and the organizers here that Chain of Command needs to con rule... The Chain of Command rule.
I don't really know if we need to make a whole big political issue out of it.
Well, you're the one who went off for 20 minutes about the...
I'm just saying the rule sucks. That's all I'm saying. But aside from that...
Or is it just because you're... Because last year you got burned by it. You were doing that one with the bridge. I forget what it was.
Everybody gets burned by it. It's who's lucky enough...
But no one else is talking about it.
Nobody else is on the show.
That's true. But as you said... You might be the only one. You haven't heard anyone else complain about it. Anyone on social media, anyone else in person here. You haven't heard. I haven't. I mean, maybe you are alone, but maybe not.
Maybe not. I would like to know.
So
if I'm, yeah,
let us know.
Maybe I'm out in left field.
We want to know. So
aside
that was Chain of Command.
If you're looking for a tactical set of World War II, yeah, I would recommend Chain of Command.
Two thumbs up from Adrian?
Yes.
Thumb and a half?
Thumb and a half. Let's do a thumb and a half.
We'll just shave off the top part, minus a nail.
The mortar thing is easy enough to fix. If all they did was say that, so if you use your Chain of Command points to end it, then the other guy shouldn't be able to just turn around and say, oh, no, you didn't end it. If you just take that away, it would be fine.
It's like playing Red Dragon Inn and someone plays a carrot.
It's exactly like
that. And then as a priestess, I say, I don't think so.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And then you're like, well, I don't think so about your I don't think so.
Yeah, just take that part of it away and it would be fine.
It's chaining your cards in Magic or Pokemon or Yu-Gi-Oh! Or
I don't play any of those games, so I couldn't tell you. But yeah.
Any collectible card game. So after that, which you had a lot of fun at, as we can all tell in a test.
I did. I played Russians for a change, which is an unusual thing. But
you don't play Russians.
Very rarely.
So did you have like one rifle you had to pass around to all you guys? Or was it like only one bullet? They all had a rifle, but it was one bullet.
They may as well have.
You will shoot. Nobody else.
They only had one rifle for as well as they did. Well, actually, it's not fair. They did pretty well, but we did end up losing. We did end up losing.
As it should be.
Yeah.
So then in the afternoon, you played Battle of Dogger Bank, right?
Yes, Castles of Steel. The rules was General Quarters. It was a World War One game, obviously, Battle of Dogger Bank in 1915.
Who was the GM for that one?
Wayne Warner.
Good guy?
Yeah. And his son helped him out with it. And
cool.
Embarrassingly, I can't remember his son's name, unfortunately, so sorry about that.
Jeez, you got to make mental notes of this stuff, man.
When we first met and... We got introduced. I couldn't remember your name for like friggin' months until after I'd seen you a couple. John. Okay, John. Yeah, that's John.
So. Should I just wear a name tag at all times?
No, everybody knows who you are now. Now you can walk around and say, "Do you know who I am?"
It's so funny. I was saying to my wife, we were walking around and all these people coming up saying hi, and they clearly know me, and I'm like. I must know them, but I don't remember how I know them.
Yeah.
And the more I think about it, I might not actually. Maybe they're just people listening to the show and seeing the face or whatever.
Maybe, yeah. So you're like Mark Wahlberg walking around down in Boston. It's like,
exactly. The same physique and everything.
Yeah. Yeah.
The money, too. I mean,
absolutely.
Rolling in it here, people. So Dogger Bank, what did you think?
I thought it was great. It was my first time playing General Quarters, so it was a new experience. World War One naval combat is kind of a favorite of mine. I don't actually have any models or anything to actually do it myself.
Well, clearly it's a favorite then.
Well, no, but I mean the period is just interesting with the, you know, it's the
Dreadnought.
Yeah, exactly. big ships beating each other up, which didn't really happen all that much in World War II, even though that's what they were gearing up for. But anyway.
No, I get you.
No, I like World War I naval. No, General Court, it's a good set of rules, it seemed to be. It's pretty detailed in the way it handles combat and movement and, in particular, spotting. So I don't know, like, it's a set of rules that I would love to pick up and possibly play, but you know what our gaming group is like, considering that you're part of it. It might be a little bit frightening for you guys, so I don't know if I will
pick it up. But you guys, do you mean me?
Mostly.
Because you, just say me, it's fine. I'm used to people making fun of me.
Mostly, yeah, but I don't know if the other guys care for it or not either.
Well, okay, then. It's more even-handed in that way.
Yeah, okay.
So it's not just me.
It's in this particular case, it's probably not just you.
Okay, so we'll emphasize not just me.
Not just Jonathan being a problem.
Okay, there we go. That's not often.
But it is good. It's, yeah, it's an enjoyable set of rules. So I don't know. It might be one of those rules where I pick it up and read it, but then never end up actually playing it. I don't know.
As I've told you before, and I tell just about anyone, I'm willing to try almost any game once, as long as...
Squad leader? Advanced squad leader?
Hey, you were going to teach me that at Total Con, and then I don't know what the heck happened.
I don't know. We didn't do anything at Total Con.
But it didn't happen. But the certain rules, as long as I don't have to paint anything for it,
yeah,
and I don't have to buy anything, I'll try it once. And then if I like it, if it's going to be a thing, I'm still not going to paint, but I'll buy.
All right.
So that's the rule. And of course, I can't be required to go like an hour and a half away.
Yeah, because that's just completely unreasonable.
It's not going to happen.
Yeah.
So it sounds like Castles of Steel Battle of Doggerbank was interesting.
Yeah, it was a good time. Battle of Doggerbank.
So what side did you play as?
I played the British. So it was British versus German, obviously.
Of course.
Yeah. Hipper versus Beatty.
Hmm.
But so it basically was British battle cruisers versus German battle cruisers. The German cruisers fleet had... been raiding along the English coast and were trying to make their way back home. And Admiral Beatty with the British battlecruiser squadron and light cruiser squadrons and destroyers and whatnot was sent out to stop him from getting back home. And we failed to stop him from getting back home. In fact, it was one of the most ridiculous and hilarious naval battles that's probably ever been portrayed on the tabletop. The British flagship, the battlecruiser HMS Lion. I blame the guy on our side who took the role of Admiral Beatty, which was Tom Ballou, who's a great guy, but I blame him.
He's not even here to defend himself.
Well, he's still around. He can walk in here and defend himself if he's listening. But, our deployment at start wasn't very good, so the German destroyer squadron was able to work their way in very close to the battlecruiser squadron, which you don't want. And our light forces, our destroyers and light cruisers, were deployed in such a way that they couldn't do anything about it, even though that was their specific reason for being. And so, basically, the German destroyers shot the Lion to pieces with little 4-inch destroyer guns. And then one of the destroyer squadrons actually rammed the Lion, so she went home with like 5 German destroyers stuck in the side of the ship. It was ridiculous. But anyway, the British...
That's a problem.
Yeah, that was a problem. The British lost that day. Actual ship losses on each side were about the same. We each lost 1 cruiser and a couple destroyers. But, it was a British loss.
And then after that, you and I both played a game, Tycho's Sword Hunt.
Yes.
Test of Honor.
Yes.
GM'd by Stephen White, right?
Yeah.
What did you think? Our first time playing it. It's a hot new game. Just came out. Warlord Games put it out.
Everybody's talking about it. It's the new must-have.
They kickstarted it, right?
I think so, yeah. Yeah, I think so. I just played it because I was curious to see what it was like. I mean, Feudal Japan's not a historical...
Well, let's be honest. You played it because I said, hey, we should play this because it's a hot new game and we should talk about it on the show.
Okay, fine. That's why I played it. But anyway, Feudal Japan's not a period, history. It's not a topic that particularly interests me. But I did want to give the game a try, and John was like, all the stuff he just said. So so anyway, we played it, and I went in with pretty low expectations. But it's actually a very fun game.
It is
it
really fun.
It plays fast. It's bloody. There's a lot of combat. There's no, real chain of command kind of rules you have to worry about. So the troops that you had, it's a skirmish game.
No mortar fires that no never end. No flipping
mortar fires that never end and completely lock the board down so that all you do for the rest
of
the game
is make saves. I go, you go, kind of set up.
I go, you, yeah, it's the, you know, draw shit out of the bag to see who goes or what type of unit goes.
Everyone has one action. Some units have more than one action, depending on what they are.
It depends on what they are. Look, from the game we played, it looked like the commoners or the peasant type troops get one action, and then the samurai are going to get anywhere from three to maybe four. Or two to four. Did one of them have four? Maybe it's two to three.
Yeah, it was, let's see, I was on the samurai side, so I had a samurai leader and a wandering samurai and a something other samurai. And the leader had three. And the other guys had two.
Yeah, my guy had three. So maybe it is just two or three. But in any case, that's how many times they get to act per turn, but they only get to do one action at a time.
Yep.
So, but it's a lot of fun. I mean, you can, if I had to compare it to anything, I think I would compare it to like some of the Wild West games that are out there. You know, only with katanas and bow sticks instead of six guns.
No, of course.
But yeah, it was a lot of fun. The scenery that they've developed to go with it.
The foreground stuff
were really nice.
Beautiful.
Yeah, really nice stuff. The figures, I don't think all of Steve's figures were from the sets, but they were really nice too.
No, I think they were.
Were they?
I think they were all Tespana pieces. I was talking to him about the terrain because he had some of the houses out and some small buildings and fences. The fences, I think, came with the core set, I think.
Yeah.
I might be wrong. Actually, I think I am wrong because they were molded brown plastic. You didn't have to paint them.
Okay.
So I don't think they came with the corset. All the buildings were foreground. And he was explaining about assembly for them, that the first one he did, it went pretty well, but the problem was squaring the house off. And what he learned was after you do the outside has a wall and then has like the overlay of the plastic that you glue on to it to give like the framing around the windows and the doors and that kind of stuff.
Oh, yeah.
But for the inside, there's a... the roofs are flat on the inside,
yeah.
And so there's kind of a framing that goes around that. And once you put that in, that keeps all the walls squared off so that the roof can then go on. And then the roof looked like it was two or three other pieces. So you have the roof, you have the thatching kind of looking stuff on it,
yeah.
And then some wooden carved pieces right on the top, which some people didn't know not to pick it up by. And you pick up by the sides. But that was on there as a separate piece. And he said that things, after you did the first one or two, they went together really quickly. Drying time, of course, took a while. But for a lot of it, he said, just a dab or two of white glue, you would hold it for like kind of two or three, and then it was fine.
Hmm.
And I got to say, I've never found that with PVA glue. When you're gluing buildings, like it needs to sit a long time for it to really set properly.
Yeah.
But he said it went like, so I don't know.
The foreground building is great. I love them. They look great on the table. I put one of the 20mm ones together, and when I say I put it together, I mean I pulled it out of the box and started gluing stuff together, and then I threw it in the trash. Because that's how hard it was for me. But that's just me.
Well, I tell you, instead of just throwing them away, you should hire someone like Mr. Michael Johns.
Yeah, well, I didn't know Mr. Michael Johns at the time, and you're familiar with my moods. So, yeah.
He's money well spent from that kind of stuff. He would do it in a heartbeat.
Well, if I hadn't thrown it in the garbage, I'd give it to him to do.
You should pick up some new ones. Maybe not for Test of Honor. I gotta say, I've been a fan of samurai stuff for a long, long time. I love all the Kurosawa films. I love the miniseries Shogun based on the novel. It's a period, I don't know a lot of the history, but a period I'm fond of, at least from film and television and comics and that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Usagi Yojimbo is a favorite comic of mine. Bunny, who's a samurai. It's funny and interesting, but it's very true to feudal Japan. And so I was all like, I'm in for this. But for me, the problem is a lot of us as wargamers, we tend to do Western gaming.
Yeah.
So we're not going to tackle stuff from like South America or even Africa, like anything outside of European or like North American kind of theater of fighting. We're not going to do. And even when it comes to like World War II or any of those global conflicts, we tend to focus more on wherever the European powers are involved. So we might go into the Pacific, and you know, you might fight against Japan in World War II, do a naval or whatever. But it's really only because the British or the Americans are there, not because of anyone else. And so I don't know if that's conscience of us, if we're all like, okay, we don't want to, or if it's just kind of something on a lower level. So I think it would be hard, even though this is really popular, I think it'd be hard to find people to play this with. And also as a result of it, I think it, unless you know what you're looking for, I think it's hard to get the reference material to do the research. If you really care about painting them properly, about making sure it looks and feels right and feels authentic.
Yeah.
And I think even if you are, I think it's challenging because it's so different from what a lot of us are used to for that hobby side of it, to get the stuff ready to prep for the game and everything. And that style of play, even though it is very similar to a Western kind of game, I think it's different enough that it's going to take you a little bit to get used to.
Yeah.
That mindset. Now, the rules themselves, I think you could plop almost anyone in. And it happened with us by turn two, turn three maybe. We were basically running it ourselves.
Oh, yeah. It's very simple.
I think that's a sign of a really well-designed set of rules.
It is. And talking about dropping stuff in, I mean, even though the theme of that game is samurai, you could take that set of rules. I didn't have a chance to read them all. But you could probably take that set of rules and drop anybody in there.
I think you could.
You know, it wouldn't have to be samurai.
You could do modern. You could do any sort of history, fantasy.
Yeah, it could just easily be feudal knights.
Sci-fi.
Yeah, anything would work in that.
I think you're right. I think they have a core system here that they could really build off of if they wanted to. Kind of like what they did with Black Powder.
Yeah, so I would be surprised if we didn't see that coming down the road. As well as expansions to Test of Honor itself, probably other games built on the system.
I know there's been some problems. For example, we didn't use any cavalry in the game, and part of that, from what I understand, from what I've seen in social media, is that cavalry are, I'm going to call them, overpowered?
Yeah.
For what's going on. And so I think that's being revisited both by the player community, but also by the company, I think, to really determine how that's going to be handled. There's no official rules for fighting within buildings.
No.
And so that's something I think that varies again. It tends to be house rules. The player community is approaching it and trying to come up with something. I think Warlord is very receptive to what the community comes up with. So if there seems to be consensus amongst people, that generally people are handling things a certain way, I think they might then adopt it as an official set of way to play it. So they might modify the rules to say, okay, this is how you can do combat inside buildings if you want. And I think they would say, okay, it works, we like it, and we'll just go ahead with that.
Yep.
So there are these areas where I think they need to kind of flesh stuff out a little bit more. And I think they will. I think they, since they have the core set of rules out, I think they're really focusing more on terrain and models, like they partner with Foreground, which makes perfect sense.
Yep.
But for the models also, you get a lot of stuff in the core box. It's like $50 for the box. I think you get like 40, 50 figs.
Yeah, it's good value.
Some terrain rules.
No doubt about that.
Dice, because it uses custom dice. And then they have expansion boxes, which are pretty affordable as well,
yeah.
I believe. And I've been tempted to pick them up, but we know what would happen.
Yeah, you won't paint them.
They'll sit in the box.
Yeah.
Although, it just saves some money. Hire Michael Johns again to. He'd paint them.
Yeah, he could. Yeah, he would.
Worth the money and just go to town. So those are the games we played. Out of the games we played, did you have one that like really stood out as a favorite for you?
Probably Carnage and Glory, just because it was so different and so new.
It was very different. I think I might have to say Test of Honor was my favorite.
Really? See, that's interesting, because when we were sitting down there waiting for the game to start, you're like, man, I don't even know if I want to play.
You know what? I did say that, but it's not because I had a lack of interest. It was because...
And then he went up to your room to do something, and I was like, if he doesn't come back, I beat him unconscious.
So, it's interesting, and we're going to talk about this a little bit, but it's interesting when you come to these things when you come with your family. And what I've always done is I've divided it up so that roughly half the time I'm able to do game kind of stuff, and the other half is family kind of stuff. So Saturday is family day. I spent the day with the family, which is why I didn't play in any morning or afternoon games like you did.
Yeah, I know. You went to a farm, which...
We'll talk about that, too.
You can see a cow anywhere. You've seen cows before, right?
And so I went back up to the room because I needed a diet because I'm like, I'm not going to last.
I was pretty tired that night, too.
It's late. Got a two-year-old, and it was her bedtime, and she didn't want me to go. And again, I'm Italian, so the heartstrings, I'm like, oh, you know, I got the kid who just...
It's because you're... Yeah. Sure, you're Italian. That's why we'll go with that.
We are very emotional people.
I thought you were French.
No, I'm not French.
No.
And, so I went back up, and then I ended up doing part of the bedtime routine with her. So it took me longer to come back down. But that's... So I was tired, and I was like, oh, you know, I was very interested in the game, but I was like, okay, I could play, or I could go to bed because the 2-year-old didn't sleep the night before. And I wasn't sure she was going to sleep that night, and turned out she didn't. She woke up in the middle of the night shortly after I came back from playing the game.
So you should have come back down to my room and had scotch, but whatever.
And so I was like, I want sleep.
Yeah.
And that's why I was like, well, maybe I won't stay. But you can't do that because, I mean, that's just rude. But
yeah, because that's one of our convention pet peeves is players that don't show up. Remember that?
It is a huge pet peeve, which is why I wouldn't do it. But for a moment, I was like, oh, man, I'm tired. I wish I could just, like, go up and just climb in bed. Because apparently I'm an old man now.
Apparently so. Well, that would have been a huge mistake.
That would have been.
You didn't do that.
No, I'm very glad I didn't do it. It's a good game. It is a toss-up between Carnage and Glory in this to me. Probably because they're the only games I played. But also, they're just, like, both really, really good, but for different reasons, different types of game.
Yeah.
The fact that Tessa Honor went a little faster, I think, might be it for me, because I'm someone, I want a quicker game.
Yeah.
So, like, that does it for me.
Yeah, and that game did go. And, I mean, we had 6 people playing, none of whom. Actually, the guy who was sitting next to me, I don't remember his name. He may have played before.
I don't think any of us have played.
No, nobody had?
I don't think so.
Considering that, the game went remarkably smoothly and quickly.
It went very, very fast. Well, let's talk about food options around it. So talk about the hotel. The room's nice, same as usual, right?
Yeah, yeah. Venue's great.
Food, you ate at the hotel restaurant?
Yeah.
Because you did a lot of games?
Yep. I didn't really have time to go out, although there was plenty of stuff close by, but I didn't want to leave.
You like the food? Get good stuff?
Yeah, it's hotel food, you know. The only thing I want from hotel food is I want it to be served quickly, and I want it to not make me sick.
Okay.
And they're able to do both those things here, so good enough.
We did room service every day for breakfast, yeah. Something we wouldn't normally do, but again, when you have a 2-year-old who's not sleeping at night... You need your caffeine first thing, the kid needs to be fed, and you want to get out to whatever you're going to do. So we did that. We hit up Heidi's Brooklyn Deli for lunch. Mm. We did that for dinner, sorry. They are fantastic. Cannot recommend them enough. So if you are ever up in Portland, not just for Huzzah, but for anything, and you're near the main mall, you need to go to them. They're literally right around the corner, not even a 5-minute drive.
Okay.
Everything's fresh. It's locally done. It's all that, like, organically sourced stuff. But they make it to order. They're very, very helpful, very friendly. The owner's husband is a wargamer. And actually, I don't know the owner's name, unfortunately. I never found that out. But her husband, very involved here with Huzzah, has been playing since even before it was called Huzzah.
Oh.
And doing stuff here. And so, actually, it's neat. The con last year and this year, last year they had coupons that they were giving out. It was 20% off you could bring over. And then this year, you could win gift certificates at the raffle, gift cards, to go over there for lunch or whatever you wanted. Very strongly recommend it. And then we went for ice cream. So it's funny. So yesterday morning, we went to Smiling Hill Farm because Jay Libby happens to live nearby, been a guest on the show, and he's involved with TSR. And been on the Mythwits and everything. And so he happened to be nearby and he came over and saw us and said hi. And he said, oh, you should go to Smiling Hill Farm. It's a place great for the kids to get really good ice cream. It's just up the road around the corner. Literally like up the road around the corner. And it's a petting zoo and all this kind of stuff. And lots of animals. They had prairie dogs and deer and, you know, all that kind of stuff. Little one loved it. It was a lot of fun. And the little one was like, okay, I want ice cream. She doesn't like ice cream. So, we're like, okay. But she didn't want to get ice cream there. So, we went to Friendly's for lunch.
Yeah.
And she kept saying, I get ice cream. She wanted ice cream. So, of course, my wife orders ice cream for her. We eat, whatever. And there's the ice cream. And my wife says, hey, do you want ice cream? Here's your ice cream. Do you want? No. And so I'm like, I'm eating my ice cream. So I'm eating my ice cream. She's just looking. And then my wife's like, you sure you don't want some? It's strawberry. She likes strawberry flavor. No. No ice cream. So my wife eats the ice cream. And then like, we had to go because the kid was done. It was nap time. But it's just like, we went there to get her ice cream.
Yeah.
And no, she did not want the ice cream at all. So it was funny. Oh, so we did that. But anyway, did Friendly's. Friendly's is good. It's weird, though. So all the Friendly's near us, there's not as many because they cut back, don't have something that this one does. A drive-thru.
Oh.
I've never seen a drive-thru at a Friendly's.
There used to be a Friendly's in Randolph. Did they have a drive-thru? No, they did not. They had a walk-up window.
Yeah.
Not a drive-thru.
There's one near us, but 10-minute drive. You can go, you park, you go in, you get your ice cream. This is actual drive. So we're curious if it's drive-thru only for ice cream, or, like, what do you get? Do you have to order at home or online, and that's how you pick it up?
Yeah, good question. I don't know.
But I've never seen it before. It's interesting. This is a brand-new one that they built last year and opened last year, and it's newly renovated and everything. So I don't know. But just some of the things you can do with family. So for those of you who do come with your family with little ones, I would highly recommend Smiling Hill Farm. $6 per adult, $6 per kid. Infants ages 1 and under are free. You can get an annual pass and all that kind of stuff. I was talking with one of the convention organizers, Joshua, and he was saying, I saw you guys heading out, so I didn't want to bother you. And I told him where we went. He said when his son was a little bit younger, like, they lived there every weekend. Yeah. His son's favorite place. So clearly it's well known to people who live in the area. But if you're just coming up on vacation, I would highly recommend, you take some time away, or if your spouse is, you're going to stay in game, you work out a thing, your spouse goes and brings a little one. Yep. There. We killed like an hour and a half there. And it felt like we were only there like half an hour. So it was worth it. And yes, I've seen a cow. No, they did not have any cows. They had like a Scottish cow type thing. It was very, I don't know what it was called.
Scottish cow type thing.
Yes, we'll go with that. Let's talk about some
apparently
of the vendors.
Apparently you didn't learn anything at the farm.
Well, I will tell you, I learned that prairie dogs are an indicator species because their tunnel system is home to more than 120 types of animals. So that's one thing I learned. I also learned that if you go there, wear long pants and have bug spray on you if you're going to go see the deer, because they're all the way in the middle of the woods, as I said to my wife, we're walking, you get walk along this weird trail in the middle of the woods. It's like, this is where like you go if you're going to go murder someone. And you just ditch the body. And the deer are in this enclosure.
Remember, folks, this is a family fun time kind of place.
It's like from one of those BBC mysteries or something. Tons of mosquitoes back. So if you're going in that part, like, don't wear shorts like I did and use bug spray. But it's fun. A lot of things for the kids to do, easy to get into. A lot of vendors here at the convention, too. So you hit up the Hobby Bunker, right?
Yeah, I don't know what it is about Hobby Bunker and Huzzah and me, but it's like where I get my rules fixed for the year, usually.
They are a perennial favorite.
Yeah. And he usually brings a lot of rules that other people aren't going to have. I mean, obviously you can get anything online, but I picked up, actually, this one you can't get online because I don't think they print it anymore, but I picked up Brigade, Fire, and Fury.
Oh, okay, you've been looking for that.
As opposed to Regimental, yeah. They don't listed on their website anymore. They just list Regimental, which is also an awesome set of Civil War rules.
Yeah.
But the brigade, the original version of Fire and Fury, the basic unit is a brigade instead of a regiment. So basically it lets you fight bigger battles with the same amount of troops.
It's cool. I took a peek over there and I was tempted to buy some magazines. Then I had to go do something else. And so I didn't end up actually picking up anything from them. But a great store. I highly recommend them. There's a couple other vendors. Silver City Games.
Yeah.
Didn't pick up anything there, but they had a nice setup.
Yeah, I didn't get anything from him this year.
Crossroad Games was set up in the corner.
Yeah.
So our buddy there, and who else was there? Eureka Miniatures had a stall, Brigadier Bookshelf.
Yeah.
Dean Emerson over there in the corner. He has a copy of something I really want to pick up, but I shouldn't. A Distant Plane.
Oh, no, I think you should pick that up.
Reasonably priced. Well, the reason why I shouldn't is because I spent a lot of money at Wargamers Terrain.
I did too.
Wargamers Terrain is fantastic. We've covered them on the show.
Yep.
We'll cover them again because I picked up more review stuff. So did you.
I did.
They have a new product actually we got to see in person. I ordered some of because they ran out of flexible hedgerows. And Joe had told me about it a while ago. And he said, you get to see this. I'm going to have it at Nassau. It is beautiful.
It is a really nice piece.
They're just like the stone fences, except instead of stonework on it,
they're hedges.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Not as tall as I would have expected, actually. You say hedge, I'm thinking of bocage.
When you say hedge, that's what I'm thinking, Normandy bocage, which these are not.
No.
Although he could easily do that, I think.
You could. I mean, he uses some sort of epoxy putty that he's created or whatever, and then it has all that really nice static grass and the flocking on it. There's pebbles and stones, and there's like tree limbs and things on it or whatever. They look really nice. I think of it more as almost an earthenwork kind of stuff.
Yeah, that's kind of the look it has. I mean,
you use it for whatever you want.
Fine natural hedge too, but yeah.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think they're beautiful, different than what I had pictured in my head. But I love them, and I would recommend just from what I had seen. So I picked up, ordered some of those. He ran out, so he's going to ship them to me. I got a Prairie because I had picked up that plowed field before with the modular crops, and we had talked about that. And at the time I said I thought the Prairie might be better, so I picked that up. I picked up a deluxe, what did I say, was the swamp? No, it was a marsh.
Marsh,
I got the deluxe marsh, and so that's really nice. And then you picked up a lot of stuff.
I spent some money there.
Money's well spent is what you mean.
I picked up six of his large-sized hills because I want to...
gorgeous.
I'm working on a Gettysburg Civil War thing, so you need a lot of low-rolling hills there.
Those will be nice, too, because with the cigar box mat, we have the hill forms that I have we can put underneath to add some contouring, and then you have those on top to give it a little extra pizzazz.
Yeah, that's actually... I hadn't thought of that. That's a good idea. But, so I've got six of his hills. Bought, I forget, like 12 or 16 feet of snake rail fencing.
Gorgeous stuff.
And, geez, what else did I get? I got two of the plowed fields and a bunch of the crops.
You did?
So.
Did you do the field grass or the crops?
Both. Yeah, so.
It's good stuff.
I wanted to get some of the corn stalks and the some of the grape arbors, but I already spent more than I probably should have, so that'll be next time, I guess.
It's funny, I was looking at those, because I was standing there for a while, and I'm like, oh, I don't know what to get, and I think it's his mother. His mother's like, have you seen this, and did you see this? And his wife was there as well, and I'm chatting with them, and Julian's over, he's like, he knows about all. And so I'm trying to come up with my shopping list for what I want, and I kept on looking at those.
Yeah.
I thought, should I get, like, I really want, but, like, I don't know if we need them right now, so I didn't. What I should have got, though, and I didn't, I should have got some of the trees. But I think that might be at a later time.
Yeah.
Get a bunch of trees from him, from a few other people, because I want to do like a tree episode here. To talk about just trees in general and all the different options that are around.
That'll be riveting, folks. Put that on your calendar. We're going to be talking about fake trees.
Trees, very important. Because when you think about it, a lot of people end up going with woodland scenics, either the pre-made or they get the armatures and do their own kind of thing.
Yeah, you know, I've never had good luck doing my own with the armatures.
It looks daunting. And then if you want pre-made from anyone else, there's not a lot of options out there.
Bachmann.
True. But for like smaller manufacturers and kind of stuff, there's not much, or it ends up being too expensive in my opinion.
Yeah.
So I think it'd be interesting to kind of take that wide array and just see what there is and be like, here's like five or six different types of trees that you can get and options you have and see how it works out.
Yeah.
So I think that might be a good episode.
Yeah, no, it could be actually, yeah. I've tried making the trees with the Woodland Scenic stuff and it's like I do exactly what they show you to do on the YouTube video.
It doesn't work.
They're crap. It's like coat the armature with that easy tack.
Nope.
Let it dry for, I think they say, like 5 minutes. Dunk it in a bowl of this stuff and then let it dry. Well, you know what? It never, ever...
It doesn't stick.
Ever dries.
Yes.
And it's sopping wet. Like, I picked one up, I don't know, the last time we played Bolt Action, I picked one up out of a box that I had put together, I don't know, months ago. And the Easy Tack was still wet. And it was like I pulled my hand off the tree and all the foliage was stuck in my freaking hand.
It's ridiculous.
So Woodland Scenics can...
They need to revisit that.
I'm obviously doing it wrong because plenty of people do it and have good luck with it.
The stuff comes out. I don't know what it is.
But, yeah, that was the other thing. Some of them I've done that, it doesn't stick.
So let's talk about the ticket raffle. This year, ticket raffle was a little different. You actually mentioned how you thought the convention had a different feel this year than in prior years.
It did.
I think that.
I mean, it was actually bigger because at the last minute they kind of put on or added a bunch of events.
They did
a bunch of games.
All the stuff was packed with people.
Yep. The venue was packed. All the games were full. I don't know. It just felt a little
subdued.
Yeah, actually, yeah. I mean, and that's
the energy level just kind of felt not as much of a buzz.
Yeah, it seemed a little bit lower. I mean, everybody was having a good time. Like I said, the place was packed. The games were great. All the games were full. I don't think any game masters were looking for players. But yeah, it just, I don't know, it felt a little bit different. Not bad, but different.
Well, this year, I mean, you played more games than I did, but this year we played in two games together. The Carnage and Glory, we were in a side room.
Yeah.
So you're not in with all the excitement. And it was actually, it was pretty quiet in there. And then when we did the Test of Honor, we were in the main room, but it was later at night.
Yeah.
It still was really quiet. And I recall from prior years, you'd have a lot more excitement. You'd have a lot more people talking loudly and like, huzzah! And they'd get, you know, they stand up and be very excited.
There was always that going on when they brought out the best of time slot
board
and that kind of stuff. Yeah, I don't know.
And It just, it wasn't, and so I don't know what it was. There's just some sort of like communal weariness to it. As far as I can tell, everyone looked like they were having fun. I had a blast.
I did too.
One of my favorite years, actually. Yeah. So I don't know quite what it was, but I think it was also evidence in the ticket raffle because they only did it twice. And I think in prior years, they would have three or four, right?
Yeah, they did.
Goings?
As I recall, and I can't remember what I had for breakfast, so I could be wrong about this. But I think like last year, I think there was a raffle Friday night.
I thought Friday night, Saturday afternoon, Saturday night, and Sunday morning.
Was it one Sunday morning?
It was like a noon or 11 o'clock one.
Yeah, I think you're right. So yeah, but they only did two this year. They did Saturday afternoon, Saturday evening.
They had really good stuff. A lot of material from Things from the Basement looks gorgeous. They had some games and that kind of stuff. But in the past, I recall there being a lot more like John Jenkins Designs kind of stuff. There was subscriptions to magazines. Yeah. There were, minis, a lot of minis and other rule sets, things. So I don't know if they didn't get as much of that this year or if the money was being spent on something else. Like, I don't quite know how that works.
Yeah, I don't either.
I've never actually asked.
I'll have to ask Dean. Dean, how does it work?
Yes, please tell us, Dean. You can tell us privately if you so wish. And right, but we're curious. The ticket raffle was something.
Yeah, I didn't win anything, but
I didn't put in. I will tell you, I was hanging out because last year I won a subscription to WSNS, a digital sub, and I've been enjoying it. And I thought, okay, this year, you know, I'll get a lot of tickets and I'll go in for the WSNS digital sub again because I like the magazine. And this way the magazine gets a subscriber and the money goes to MHWA to help them out. They're a nonprofit. They do good work and all this kind of stuff.
Yep.
And there was no, none that I saw. There's no basket that was like, yeah, get a subscription to WSNS or Ancient History or Ancient Warfare or Medieval. And I didn't see any. So if it was there, I missed it and I spaced out. But I didn't see a lot of things, a lot of stuff, but I didn't see. A lot of it was like repeat raffles. So there was some fish game that people were really excited about. It looked cute, came in a thing, and like there was like five or six and like one basket you could put in.
Yeah.
So you'd have six winners. I mean, there was a lot of prizes.
Yeah, there was definitely a lot of
stuff. It wasn't as much variety as in prior years. That I could tell. I probably am wrong, and if I am, I will say, hey, I was wrong. But just from first glance, what I saw. Why don't we, before we go on to my favorite section of the show, why don't we just talk about some of the people that we got to see, familiar faces or new people that we happen to see. You have a fun story about someone who talked with you, right?
Yeah, this is kind of unusual. So when I was playing the...
unusual for you.
right, because I'm not Jonathan J. Reinhardt, do you know who I am kind of guy. Unusual for me. So at the my chain of command game... I was playing with a guy named Sal, and I can't remember his last name. Sorry about that. But, we were kind of facing off across the table. It was him against me, and we got to chatting during the game and everything. But anyway, I used to run a wargaming blog, which I've since given up on because, well, I'm lazy, and it's a lot of work to maintain the thing. But a few years ago, we got into a game called...
Naval Thunder?
Excuse me. Yeah. And he read this review that I put up on the blog about this game, and he liked the review. But anyway, long story short, he basically said he got into the game because of the review I wrote, which was kind of a surprising thing to hear, because who gives a crap what I have to say about anything? But anyway, he...
People do. You know, we talked about it on the show, too. We did an episode. We talked about Naval Thunder on the show, and what we liked and what we didn't like.
I forgot about that, yeah.
Yeah. Because we're memorable here at Wargaming Recon.
Well, John is. some people can't even remember my name. I'm not going to mention anyone in particular.
They don't even know you were in the room. Hey, it happened to me too. So.
That's right. He took pictures with you and he posted them.
Were you there?
Were you there? Oh, my God, yeah. That's definitely worse than somebody not remembering my name.
It feels good when someone says, hey, I like what you did.
It does. It was surprising.
I took your advice, and it made a difference for me.
Yeah, and Naval Thunder, Battleship Row, good set of World War II rules.
I highly recommend.
Yeah, it's a good set of rules. It kind of strikes a nice balance between complexity and ease of play.
You thought it'd be a little more complicated than I would like, but I like it.
Yeah, a lot of naval rules have a hard time with that. You either get ridiculous levels of complexity, like Seakreek, which is an awesome game.
One you've said I will never play.
I wouldn't even attempt to introduce you to it. Yeah.
Well, as I said earlier in the show, you know, I will try anything once as long as I don't have to, you know, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, but no.
Okay.
That's so, on so you. You've got that level of complexity in naval warfare, or you have, like, war at sea, and it's like, it doesn't seem like a whole lot of rules meet in the middle, but Naval Thunder, Battleship Row does. And actually, now that I've played at General Quarters, I would say that one does, too.
That's a good one for them.
So. But anyway, that was kind of a neat thing. It never happened before.
Sal's a really nice guy. We've seen him in a lot of things. He's played in games that we've run at TotalCon. Yeah. Just everywhere.
Yeah.
So I'm sad I didn't get to see him, but I'm glad you guys had a nice conversation that he liked your review of Naval Thunder.
Yeah, very surprised.
We got to see John Grogan. We haven't seen him in a long time because he moved and he's just up here for a little while. And
yeah, work up here for work for the weekend, I guess is what he said.
He's going to be moving back. I'm moving to Vermont, I think, right?
New Hampshire.
New Hampshire, sorry. And so it was nice to see him and got to see a lot of other people. A lot of people, actually. A lot of people saying hi as we walked around. A lot of familiar faces. One of the great things about Osaka, you come a few times, you get to know people, and you see a lot of people time and time again. So Kyle and came by and said hi.
Yeah.
One of our Patreon backers. Got to see Robert. Robert, I've seen him just about every year I've been here. Who else? We saw a lot of people. Too many to name. Just about anyone who's been a guest on the show this year has been here.
Yeah.
So Gabriel's been here. Who else have we missing?
Michael Johns.
Michael Johns, that's right. Mike Payne.
Yep.
Of course, was running his Hang High game. God, I'm blanking just because there's so many.
Well, you're so well known.
Clearly. I should have went around with a notepad and be like, I saw you and you. And don't mind me, I'm not being creepy. I'm just... I want to make sure I get all your names down so I can mention. I feel bad because just so many, a lot of people, just tons of people. Everyone's very friendly.
Yeah.
It's a great place to come, a game. You really feel like you're part of it and they make you welcome. It's not like, oh, you come the first time and you're excluded, you're an outsider. It's just this big group and everyone just seems to have a good time and get along.
Oh, yeah. I mean, gaming's like that in general, I find, but yeah.
It depends. So let's move on to my favorite section of the show, the mailbag. Mailbag is where people write in, either emails or they post on social media, and they get to share things that they like about the show.
I was disappointed when I first came on the show and you talked about the mailbag and that was your favorite part. I was disappointed there's not an actual mailbag.
I will leave that on you to do. It's hard, though, to get all those electronic bytes and bits into that mailbag.
I'm not trying hard enough.
Do you remember the History Channel used to have a show, and I can't remember the guy's name. He portrayed as a drill instructor, and he's been in a bunch of things.
Oh, yeah, Arlie Ermey.
And he's like, and it's a mailbag! And he's like, yes. And he'd actually have the big duffel bag full of mail.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I forget what the show was that he was on, where he would do this, but it would just, it'd appear every so often, I guess, on History Channel. And he'd open it and be like, listen up, dirtbags!
Yeah, it's funny, I used to watch that show, not regularly, but, you know, often. But, I can't remember the name of it either, but Arlie Ermey is the guy's name.
I think of it every single time. We have the mailbag section of the show. Like, what's that guy's name? What was the show? And it's mailbag.
All right, I'll dig out one of my duffel bags and give it to you, and you can have it.
And I don't know what we'll put in it, because again, I guess I can shove the computer in it. We'll just take this computer out of the mailbag.
Anyway, do the mailbag.
Via Facebook, listener Tom said of episode 183, that was Cigar Box Battle with Chris Ward, quote, I own 6 of these, so fat, and would strongly consider buying more. They are very useful. Double-sided mats sound like a great idea, unquote. And I'm laughing because I copied this word for word, but I'm presuming so fat is a typo.
Why?
I own 6 of these, so fat. I think it means so far is what I'm presuming he's saying. I own 6 of these so far and would strongly consider. I own 6 of these so fat.
So far, or he might mean fat, P-H-A-T, pretty hot and tempting.
Could is that really what that means? Nope. It was literally F-A-T, and I copy and paste because I don't know what.
Well, maybe it is a typo then.
Well, I think it's a typo. I think it's so far because I'm presuming it was done on a smartphone, and you're with me. I get the fat thumbs, and you're going in. So anyway, first of all, Chris, thank you very much for writing in, and I agree with you. I don't have 6. I got 3. It's an obsession. I want more.
Yeah, I definitely want to get the Caribbean mat for the pirate game we're going to run. And
the Kickstarter.
Yes.
I don't know when that's going to start. The summer sometime. But double-sided mat sounds great.
Yeah.
It's something actually I think I suggested to them once upon a time in some sort of conversation we had off the air.
So you're taking credit for that?
Well, clearly it's a universal idea. And then,
so what you're doing is universal zeitgeist. I suspect you're.
I think it's an idea they already had.
You're laying the groundwork that this double-sided mat thing was your idea, and then when they produce it, you're going to approach them for a cut of the profits.
Well, clearly, actually, at 20%. I'm pretty sure it's a common idea, and that hearing from me, and I presume a lot of other people, made them think, okay, something we thought we should do. There's interest in it from the community, people who would probably buy it, so let's go ahead and do it. I think we should do it, and I agree with you, Chris. Double-sided mats, good idea. So thank you for writing in, and you too can get heard on Wargaming Recon. If you want to send us some feedback, email jonathan@wargamingrecon.com, or we're on Facebook, Twitter, we're on Instagram, Snapchat, all that kind of good stuff. Who knows? You write in, and you might get your feedback and your mail read here on this section of the show. Got a few announcements for us to make. We are about halfway to our next Patreon goal. That's roughly $55. I know it sounds like a lot, but it's really, it'll go fast, and or so we hope. So the next goal will allow us to hire an audio editor to professionally edit the show so that the audio content's really good. Joshua's doing it right now just to kind of help out, but he should be paid a fair wage, is honestly what it is. And audio editing is a bear, and that's part of the reason why I don't do it anymore. And I suppose
if it's hard, Jonathan doesn't consider it worthwhile, at least not for him to do.
Hey, I did it for like 9 years of the show. 9 years, long time. Longest running tabletop wargaming podcast on the planet.
In the known universe.
Okay, we'll go with that. It sounds a little pretentious, but if you want it, hey, we will use that.
That's funny, you're complaining about pretension.
So 9 years of it, 9+ years, it's time to allow me to refocus my energies. And meeting this goal will allow us to pay Joshua a fair wage for it. You too can become a backer on the show on Patreon for as little as $1 per month, less than a cup of coffee. That'll get you episodes before non-backers. And we also have extra behind-the-scenes content. There might be posts where I write out things that are going on, thought process, extra audio, video, a variety of things. I want to thank our Patreon backers, Patrick, Chris Parker from dayofbattlegames.com, and Kyle from Vermont. As I said, you too can become a backer by going to wargamingrecon.com/Patreon, or just visit our show notes, wargamingrecon.com/WR184. That's wargamingrecon.com/WR184. The next episode of the show is episode 185, comes out June 12th, 2017, and that is when you and I, in case you forget, Adrian, are going to be talking about how to prep for a convention game.
Oh, yes.
And that should be a lot of fun for people to hear, I hope. Before we wrap up the show, any other last tidbits you want to share? Oh, we have my 2-year-old here in the audience, very excited. Hi, sweetheart. Hi.
No.
No, that's a no from Adrian. Hi, sweetie. So I want to thank everyone very much for listening to this episode of Wargaming Recon. I want to give a huge, very large, huge loses meaning nowadays because of our president. Everything's huge. I want to give my most sincere thanks to the Maine Historical Wargamers Association, of which I am now a member.
Oh.
And hurrah! And everyone here at Huzzah for all that they do. If you are not a member of the MHWA, I really very much highly recommend it. Great organization. They're a nonprofit. They do a lot of work to help get kids involved in wargaming and give them something to do. Gaming is not just sitting at a table and moving some pieces around. There's so much more to it. There's a lot of social aspects to it. Help kids learn that. It's invaluable for their lives. A lot of math. There's a lot of writing, literature. A lot of great educational aspects to gaming that will help you in many other areas of your life. And you might just think, oh, I'm just rolling dice and playing a game. But there's so much more than that to it. And MHWA does a lot with that. And of course, they help to put on this fantastic show that we have here at Huzzah. It's probably one of my favorite gaming conventions, my favorite historical gaming convention that I've been to. Very well done. They make us very comfortable here.
Yeah.
We've got this great venue here. We've got a whole room to ourselves. It's pretty cool.
Yeah.
And they're just fantastic. So thank you, all of you, for all that you do here to help us at Wargaming Recon, and hope that we do even just a small bit to give back and help promote the show and encourage people to come, because Huzzah is wonderful. And of course, they are also a sponsor of us here at Wargaming Recon, and without their sponsorship and without the support of our Patreon backers, we couldn't do the show. Just it would not be possible. So thank you to all of you. I want to remind you that episode 185 comes out on June 12th, and the show notes for this episode, very, very important, wargamingrecon.com/WR184. That's wargamingrecon.com/WR184. We'll have all the things we talked about. We'll have links and all that kind of stuff, so you can get more information about the games that we played and see some pictures and all that sort of stuff. So thank you, Adrian, for being on this episode.
Sure.
I know you enjoy it.
I do.
You may not hear it in his voice, but it's funny because you did say once, you told me, that you did not expect to enjoy doing this, but you actually really
no,
do.
No, I didn't. The first time I was on the show was actually here.
It was. Pulling teeth.
We did that the first time, and it's like...
You wanted to leave.
When I was on the Mythwits, and John was supposed to be on, but he was sick, but one of the questions that came up with was, what does John actually bring to Wargaming Recon? Because I had made the point, whereas, in terms of gaming at least, I do all the work. It's as simple as that.
I do the PR for the game.
The only thing I could come up with that John is actually any good at is getting people to do stuff that they don't actually want to do.
I am very good at that.
So that's what happened to me that year when he just kept whining. And so
encouraging is the word you're looking for.
It'd be fun. And, you know, you don't have... It's like, yeah, because I'm up here to game for the weekend, and what I really want to do is give up an entire morning of gaming to be on your friggin' show.
1 hour. 1 hour of gaming.
It's a block, so you lose 4 hours.
It only took 1 hour.
But anyway, to shut John up, I was like, yeah, okay, I'll do the show. And I thought it would suck, and I didn't want to do it. But much to my surprise, it was fun. So here we are, what, 3 years, 4 years later?
Yeah, I still remember you showed up that day. And I thought to myself, if I turn my back to him, he's going to be gone. He'll be halfway home if I turn my back. So I can't take my eyes off this guy. We're going to do the thing. And I knew you would like it. And that that must be my talent. I can tell what the trends are.
Maybe.
I get my fingers on the pulse of the Wargaming community something.
That could be it. But anyway, yeah, no, so here we are.
So we are here and doing more great content. So... thank you, everyone, for listening to this episode of Wargaming Recon. No matter how busy you are, no matter how much gaming and how much planning you are doing for the next time you're going to come to Huzzah in beautiful Portland, Maine, you know that you have to. You need to. You're gonna keep on gaming.
Are you always on the go? Why not take Wargaming Recon with you? If you use an app like Pocket Casts, you can listen to your favorite episodes of Wargaming Recon on your mobile device. Wargaming Recon is a proud member of the TSR Podcast Network. Visit wargamingrecon.com/TSRPN for more information and to learn about the other good shows on the network. This recording is released under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial Share Alike license. Many thanks to Andrew and Court for inspiring the show's name. Wargaming Recon is dedicated to the memory of longtime listener Andrew. I ask all listeners to join me in a moment of silence in memory of Andrew. Wargaming Recon is made possible by listeners like you. Become a Patreon backer to get behind-the-scenes content and new episodes before everyone else, starting at $1 per month. Visit WargamingRecon.com/Patreon to become a Patreon backer. Wargaming Recon is proudly sponsored by the Maine Historical Wargamers Association. They're the folks behind Huzzah! Historical Wargaming for New England. Huzzah will take place May 19th through the 21st, 2017 at the Doubletree in South Portland, Maine. Experience some of the best historical wargaming at Huzzah! Visit www.huzzahcon.com for more information.